Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, Collie, I have something for you to listen to.
Okay.
And it's somebody you know. It's a sound made by somebody you know. And see if you can guess.
If it's someone farting, I'm going to be really disturbed. All right, because that's a completely different podcast altogether.
It's not farting. Okay, but it is somebody you've met before. So okay. See if you can guess who it is.
What the hell is that?
Or who the hell is that? Any idea?
It sounds like somebody asleep.
Somebody who lives with me.
Well, I hope it's not Leo, because he won't be too happy. Your boyfriend wouldn't be very happy with you putting that. I would imagine it's one of the cats, and
it
I would say it's your favourite, Big Old Ted.
That's Big Old Ted.
Brilliant,
yeah.
Brilliant.
And the reason I'm playing you that is because in this episode, we're going to be talking about sleep in one particular species.
Okay, and what species would that be?
Well, let's go and find out.
Awesome, looking forward to it.
I'm not worthy. Good to see you. Good to meet you, Collie. I feel like I almost know you, but I totally don't.
So the place we're actually going to is the Elephant House in Dublin Zoo. And the person that we're here to meet is Brendan Walsh, who is one of the zookeepers there.
Well, great to have you here. Welcome to the zoo.
Thank you.
Nice sound effect, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you want to go in?
Yeah,
Let's do that.
Cool, yeah.
Cool, okay, I'll just give a radio check.
Lovely.
Elephant House, over.
Go ahead, Brendan.
Jer, are we okay to come in via the side gate?
Yeah, I was just coming around here. The elephants are in the house. I'm going to let them out the next couple of minutes, but you can have a quick chat here for
me. Okay, thank you.
How are you?
Jerry, you know Collie, don't
you?
Hello, how are you? I just did the left of the yellow line there, so.
So, we're here to talk about sleep patterns in elephants. Brendan studied the sleeping patterns of this group of elephants in Dublin Zoo over the period of about 3 years. And he came up with some really interesting findings about how they sleep and how much they sleep. And he wrote a paper about this sleep study. And he's going to share these insights with us.
So we have 11 elephants in this house, as you're probably aware. Beautiful sound effects. And actually, speaking of noises, our elephants were classed in a study about 5 years ago as the most communicative, the ones that were talking, interacting the most with each other.
Chatty catties.
Very good. Absolutely really were. And the noises that we hear, the odd rumblings, is only a tiny proportion of their actual noises. Majority of their sounds are infrasounds, much lower our hearing frequency.
They hit through their feet, is it?
The rumblings, vibrations come up through their feet as well, absolutely. So you can see a trunk coming towards us here, yeah. So which is why we're standing well back. This house is... I'm a big fan of this house, basically. This house was built well ahead of its time. Lots of zoos, I'm delighted to say, are copying this design now. You can see in front of us, we've got lots of sand. That sand is at a depth of 1.8 metres.
And he's kicking it at me.
That's it, we're new, so yeah. So they're always responding to that, all right.
Yeah.
But
more sand kicked at us. So many calves and just a beautiful herd of elephants here in the house, milling around, coming towards us, very curious. Trunks coming through the bars, eyes looking at us. Oh, it's wonderful.
No, they're very playful. They're quite interactive, especially the calves. And it is amazing. Like, you know, back in the early noughties, this was the goal, to create a herd that were... the adults were related to each other and therefore the calves were related to each other, and that they have that strong connection with each other. So it's brilliant to see now.
Brilliant. So we're here to talk about sleep.
Do you want to walk this way?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Elephant sleep. How do they do it?
How do they do that noise?
Yeah, well, this is the great thing. So basically, as zookeepers, we see the elephants throughout the day. Yeah. Now, we have introduced CCTV in the zoo a long time ago. So occasionally we would get to see what they're doing at night time. But we decided back in 2012, we decided that we wanted to see...
It's amazing.
I hope you can still hear me. They are responding extra because we don't get many outside zoo visitors here. So class yourself as major VIPs for being here.
Thank you very much. Very much appreciated.
And for scientific research and things like that, we really only let people in nowadays.
We're going to walk on a little bit so that we can give them a little break from us.
Hey, Jerry, Christina. So some of my fellow colleagues are coming in to hi, Hannah. So some of my colleagues are going to give them a bit of food here. And what's happening here now actually is we have three keepers here to my right. And another keeper is outside, and basically they're communicating with their radios. It's always about communication, always about safety, and always about calmness. And when we know that the elephants are calm and steady, that gate will open up, and then when everyone's happy with their radio communication, the elephants will go out, and then the keepers will say, "Okay, you can go." I won't say too loud in case they hear me, and so they obviously understand a lot of English. And even animals that come from different zoos, be it France or anything like that, they obviously understand more French than they would English. Sure. They need to learn those words. So these elephants originally came from Holland.
And, so they're bilingual elephants.
Yeah, absolutely. Holy they really would shit. Be. Like when they're absolutely when their previous keepers come here to visit them, of course an elephant doesn't forget. And they do remember them, and the keeper will be speaking in Dutch, and you know, I 100% believe they understand some of those words. And obviously, you know, the tone, as we always know, is the big thing, of course, as well. But I mean, aren't they amazing? Look at these.
Oh my god, they're stunning.
It's crazy.
So much activity because the keepers are throwing sort of little nutty things in front of them in front of the bars, so they're actually working. And now the door is open and they're rushing to the outdoors now.
Leg it.
That's brilliant. Just a lot of arses going out the front door.
11 bums running away. You can see we're outside now. You can see the elephants are all feeding. We have a sign in front of us here saying no unauthorised person beyond this point, bull elephant. So at the moment we don't have a bull elephant because we need one. In the wild, elephant herds are very much about girl power. You don't have an adult bull living with the herd. He enters the herd when there's a female in oestrus, and when his job is done, he's gone. And about 98% of mammals are the same. It's very much the mothers in families that rear the babies. Monogamy is extremely rare. So this is quite typical really for most mammals, where the male becomes the father and then moves on. Let's go into the bull house. So this is, we've got two houses here in the zoo. This is one of our newer houses, but it's basically the same design as our other house. So this is the house that our bull elephant lived in at night time. But the joy again about what we're constantly trying to think, how can we make things better? So we don't lock our elephants in at night, unless the weather's very bad and they won't want to go out anyway. But we constantly analyse what you're doing. We've done this for years. Is it the right thing to do? So many, many years ago, with supervision, we watched them one night and we realised, yeah, they like being out. Now, they often won't go out past midnight. Like, you know, they'll go for strolls, say, on a nice summer's evening, 7, 8 o'clock. They might go again about 10. But you do see routines develop. Once it kind of hits midnight, it is really the labba time. And the calves will lie down about 9, but the adults later.
So I happen to live here with Leo, who runs the zoo. It's great.
Look at you, yeah.
It's really great. And I've seen them. I've seen them out kicking up their heels in the evening time, very late, in the lashings of rain, and just having a great time.
Brilliant, absolutely. And the great thing about the rain as well is it will often stimulate them to go for a swim, won't it? You've probably seen them swimming late at night.
Yeah.
And you know, and I've been here a few times late at night. And obviously with the cameras, how I know that they sleep is we've got many, many cameras in this area. Yeah. So how I analyse if they're sleeping or not, or how much they're sleeping, is basically the next day you come in, you rewind the cameras and you watch many screens, and you can see where each elephant is sleeping, who they're sleeping beside, how long they slept for, and also what side of their body sleep on. Yeah. And so elephants will never lie down straight down. It'd be too much pressure.
For a second. So they do lie down. They don't do the sleeping standing up thing.
Not really, no. No, they can. There is arguments that they do have a form of sleep when they're standing up.
Okay.
That's probably quite true. But to get deep REM sleep, a lot of people would firmly believe that they need to lie down.
I can relate to that when I'm getting the half six Lewis into town and I'm standing up on it and I'm actually asleep, but I'm not really asleep. So I suppose, yeah.
Well, there's great things. I read some fascinating papers about sleep when I'm doing this, when I was writing the paper, and drowsy state is a very technical term for a lot of antelope species. So a lot of antelope species, obviously 24/7, they could get devoured by a lion, a tiger, mm-hmm. depending on their continent. And so this drowsy state, their body's shutting down, but they're still alert of what's going on. Whereas elephants don't really have to do that, because not as significantly so, is my theory anyway, because they're so big and because they're such a big, strong herd, they can really watch out for each other. And this is one of the theories why they are able to go into such a much deeper sleep. The adults will often lie down later in the night. The calves, once it hits kind of 9 o'clock, rarely before, unless they're very young, they won't lie down. Once it hits about 9 o'clock, the calves will start to go down. But when they're very young, you're looking at 20 to 25 times of lying down and getting up during the night, so a lot. And then for the adults, you're looking at rarely four, sometimes four, but usually three times a night of about 50 minutes to an hour each. Usually they don't stay in the one position for more than an hour. They want to get up. They might go for a bit of a stroll, get some water. They drink about 200 litres of water a day, have a pee, have a poo, and then go back down and lie down on the other side. So they usually change sides then. However, this is where I started to notice. I was doing more L's for left than R for right. So I was like, well, what's this about? How come I'm writing? And I added up, and for one elephant it was 71% left. And obviously, I was at 29% right. And I kind of thought, yeah, that's interesting. And tried to find information, couldn't find anything at the start. And we do keeper talks here at 12:30. And I mentioned this in my keeper talk, at a few different keeper talks. And I mentioned the sleep study and said, oh, by the way, our elephants are, we're studying their sleep behaviour. And we noticed that our elephants, especially when they're pregnant, are sleeping more on their left. And you'd see mammies and you'd see pregnant women nodding at me encouragingly and then coming over to me. And they were saying, I'm the same. I feel more comfortable on the left. My doctor told me sleep on the left. And I thought, right, there's something in this. And then I looked into it. And the heart in the elephant is turned to the right. Mm. So when they lie on their left, they've got a better blood supply, therefore a better oxygen supply to their own body, to the fetus. And so this is probably the reason why they sleep on their left. And, you know, so the fact that humans are told so much about it, and I think most, anytime I mention this to any mother or any pregnant person, they always say the same thing. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was the same. So I think, you know, this is something, again, I'd never heard of and no one else had heard of before. So this is why going deeper and really watching your animals with CCTV and watching them at times you don't normally do, it opens up a whole new world.
Fascinating stuff, yeah.
We're in this lovely house, which is really echoey because it's huge. How big is it?
I don't know the exact dimensions, but
it's
big.
It's really big.
What would we hazard a guess at? I would go at least, would you call it 700 square metres maybe?
At least.
So it's. But most importantly though, it's you know, traditionally and still now, we often think, oh, they're happy to have lots of space. But really, space is absolutely important. But really what you have in that space is as, if not more important.
Yeah.
I mean, I could...
Stimulation.
Absolutely. Yeah. I totally believe you could give these elephants in this area 10 times the amount of space. But if they have nothing in it, what would their drive be to keep moving around if there's no need to move around? If all the food is in one corner and all the water is in one corner. Animals are clever. They're not going to waste energy. Mm. You know, for millions of years, they've been careful about how they do everything. And they're not going to suddenly start going, do you know what, lads? We've been here a while. We've been doing nothing. Let's keep walking.
Yeah.
Let's watch the old tummies. So
sometimes when I've been in the house or see the elephant house on the camera footage that we can watch, I see mounds of sand that you guys make. What's that all about?
Yeah, we'll tell you what. We walk. So we're at the kind of the keeper area here at the moment. So let's walk into the house.
So away peacocks hanging out.
They're fantastic. And as a zookeeper, every so often you'll get a little bit startled because you're thinking, this area's meant to be empty. Why is there an animal here? And
peacock and
dinosaurs
two
peahens. Dinosaurs in this little house.
And I'm delighted to hear you say that, because when I tell people that, they're just looking at me as if I'm seriously on lots of drugs.
I've been screaming at the students when we were in Africa this year. I'm like, there's a dinosaur.
Yeah.
There's a dinosaur.
Absolutely.
Especially like secretary boards and some of the guinea fowl. And you really see them if you look at it. You know?
I'm a big fan of Jurassic movies because the parks and the world movies, because they would bridge that gap for people to look at these amazing animals.
I brought a lot of kids into it. Need more feathers though.
That's
another podcast.
But we're going to open up the gates here. So again,
we're going to walk into the space where Upoli the bull used to be during the night.
But the joy of this house now, so this house is separate from the first house we're in. The first house we refer to as the cow house, obviously the house for the females and their calves. But also with Upoli gone now, we say he's done lots of reproducing with the girls, so his time was to move on. And So, and that's actually another reason why we train, is that when they were moving out, we trained him and we trained his a male we had here years ago, Budai. We trained them to walk into a crate every day for months on end. So when the day for them to go, it was easy.
Brilliant.
And they didn't stress.
I remember when Upley arrived. He arrived in at midnight into Dublin Port.
Well.
And he was in a specially created crate for him with things that he needed to look out and be very comfortable. And there's a keeper with him the whole time. So this is when he arrived from...
Chester Zoo.
Chester Zoo. The truck came in with him on the back. They backed into
the door,
which exactly matched the dimensions of the crate. The door opened and this enormous animal backed out very gently, turned around, had a drink of water and started eating. And he was not stressed at all. It was unbelievable.
And again, Chester Zoo are a fantastic zoo. And, you know, we work together a lot. And I'm sure you work with them a lot as well. I worshipped the ground they walked on from the age of about 12. My parents were, after plaguing them, they were very nice to me and brought me over. And I spent 2 days just walking around. I just love that zoo. It's a great zoo. And when we reflect how we look after elephants in the same way.
Has he gone back there now? Or
no, he's gone to zoo in France now.
So he's just... the happy wanderer going around the world.
You can see why he's probably happy to get out of that crate. Lovely.
He knows what's going on. He knows what's up.
Absolutely. And I'd imagine there's a huge chance that when he arrived here, he could have been communicating. Because obviously our females were in a separate house. But with infrasound, again, we couldn't hear any noise from him. He seemed nice and quiet to us. Yeah. But in reality, he was probably going, anyone here?
I hear
three lovely Dutch elephants there. What's going
smoking
on here?
A pancake.
Yeah.
So we're in the bull space now. There's loads of sand. I presume it's a couple of metres. And then there's a mound in the middle. And there's two peahens and a peacock just wandering around, just looking for nibblies.
Absolutely.
And there's three of them, actually. There's another one over there.
So this house is brilliant. So basically, the design... It's I just love it. We recommend it to lots of different zoos.
And the smell is great.
That's the thing,
so,
isn't it? A great smell.
So soft the ground. It really is.
It is. So we're on it now, and you can really feel the flexibility there.
Yeah.
So our big bull elephant, he was weighing just under 5 tons, if I remember correctly. So he's a big, strong elephant, and you can imagine, like, you don't need a degree in zoology. You just need a bit of common sense. Keeping animals of any size really on concrete, unless they're like a rocky mountain animal or something like that, they shouldn't be on concrete. It doesn't absorb anything. It's very hard on the bones. It might create discomfort for one night, but you can imagine how bad that'll be for their bodies long
term. They didn't evolve on concrete.
Absolutely. So
shoes off and walk around on concrete on a hot day yourself, or on a cold day or any day.
Absolutely. And that's what we do when we're building something. We try and use nature as our inspiration. So we're going, right, what do they do in the wild? Okay, they walk on sandy soil, they walk on soil, they walk on sand. So let's create that rather than going, let's create something completely new. That's a ridiculous notion. We need to copy what they have in the wild, and that's what we've done with this house. So here
we're
in front
of Nike Air Max on an elephant anyway, so
absolutely not, cost a fortune. So with the sand mounds here, basically the importance of these is, and believe me, these sand mounds have been four times the height of this at times, and the next day they'll come in and it'll be half the size. Basically it's their pillow. So especially for bull elephants, and the Asian elephant, it's only the bulls that sometimes have tusks. Vast majority nowadays, because of poaching, don't. Now you're at a genetic advantage to not have tusks, which is horrifically sad. The benefits of the sand is equally important for males and females, but if you can imagine you've got big tusks and you're lying down and you're on concrete, well, that tusk can't go into the ground. Then your neck is going to twist. And forever then, every time you lie down, if you're going to lie down on concrete, which the elephants are very clever and they probably won't want to lie down on concrete. So the great thing about the sand is he can dig his tusk into the ground and lie straight. And that's it. And same with the calves and with the adults. When they're lying down, and sometimes they won't want to use the mound. Like Dina, for some reason, she prefers just flat sand. But isn't it great that she has the choice? And so if you have like six elephants, you wouldn't want to be just putting one mound in. You always want to put a few in. In this house, one's enough because there's only one bull elephant that's in here. However, we don't waste this house either. So we'll often use this house. Most nights this house is used. We can decide which house you want to sleep in. So we've so
you
many
want to get away from the rest of the people.
Well, that's it. We would call it like a vertical split, where basically you wouldn't have all the calves come down here and the mammies and the aunties and the grannies stay in the other house. Not now anyway, because they're all quite young. Like with elephants, it's very much as we said, it's all about female matriarchy. So grannies, daughters, granddaughters, female cousins, sisters will all stay together forever. They won't separate. Whereas the males will always leave. So sometimes you might have a bit of vertical split. Say resources are very tight and they're thinking we can't feed ourselves, the area's gone too, there's not enough food here. You'll have a vertical split where older elephants will move with younger elephants, but they might return then quite quickly. It might only be separation for a few hours, a few days, but generally if there's food resources, they're going to stay together. They want they want to stay attached.
And the sleeping, the arrangements of them sleeping in humps and lying on the ground, that is the same as what they do in the wild?
Yeah, well, it's
we have pictures, don't we?
We do.
Hang on.
So I'm looking at two large adult elephants lying down, trunk to trunk, just at the edge of a mound, and in between them are two of the juveniles. Some one of them's very young. Calf, and they're just snuggling up to them.
They're amazing.
It's a very, very cute looking picture. Very, very cute.
There's another one that's a closer one, and now you can see them. Like, the calves are using their aunties and as pillows as well.
And I've seen that. That's what really blew my mind as well with the study. It was very motivating to do this because you only need about anything between half an hour and an hour to do. Usually it was about 20 minutes to half an hour to do one night's recording. Yeah. But you could never get bored of it because regularly you saw different things. But one thing I noticed was Asha's mother is the matriarch Dina. And during the day, you would recognise that. But if you didn't know them at night time, you'd think Yasmin was her mother. Asha would often lie with Yasmin instead of Dina. So you think you know your herd so much, but then this whole new world opens at night time. New dynamics. Now, why is that? We can only ever guess. But with Dina being the matriarch, there might be an element that Dina is more alert and needs to be more alert than the others. It's her job to keep an eye out. So she might be thinking, oh, Mam's standing up watching out again. I might lie down here beside me, Auntie Yasmin. Ah. And so that's only a theory now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But you know, and then same when the calves are born, Asha and Annick, her relative, her cousin, both of them did the same thing. When the new calves are born, they matured overnight.
Oh.
So when Annick arrived here, she was this young elephant, and she was, I think, she was only three when she came here. But when the calves were born, like literally overnight, they matured.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I have a new young relatives now. I'm going to cop onto myself, and I'm going to watch out for them.
I'm not the baby anymore.
Exactly. And they seem to enjoy that authority, or seniority, not authority, but seniority. And it's fascinating. They would stand beside them and wait until they're properly asleep, they seem to enjoy this new seniority. The quantity of sleep is the big thing I was looking at. So the calves up to about 5.5 hours a night, the adults on average 3.5 hours a night. So overall in the whole house, the elephants are sleeping
that's quite a small amount of sleep for such a big animal.
Well, the sleep is typical for herbivores. So when you look at carnivores, they sleep the most.
Okay.
Omnivores, medium amount, and herbivores the least.
Wow.
So we need, you know, at about 8 hours. And you know, you've heard of various people over the years saying, oh no, I don't need that much sleep, I only need five or six hours of sleep.
Georgia.
Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah,
Thatcher as well, yeah. And however, people that have studied sleep would disagree with them and say, no.
Yeah.
You would have been healthier, happier, and more cognitive capacity if you had slept more. And actually, even coming in here this morning, listening to the radio, and a research has come out there recently about the number one cause of arguments in a research poll is lack of sleep.
Yeah.
And being a father of a two-year-old, I can totally relate to that.
And being a husband of a very light sleeper, when I have to get up in the morning, it's hell on earth, because it's like the first 4 hours of my day are just avoiding the dragon. Sorry, Ruth. But
it's true, though, isn't it? And that's why another reason, like, you know, you have to be careful how you, you know, relate our feelings to theirs. But I think generally your assumption will be fairly correct, depending on what you're thinking of. But I would imagine for elephants, of course, it's the same.
Yeah.
If they're not getting their sleep, well, how are they doing? How are they feeling?
Yeah.
And obviously we know they have emotional needs like any animal. And, you know, so it's I feel great about the fact that our elephants are getting the similar sleep levels that they do in the wild, and even walk similar levels in the wild. On average, they walk about 10 kilometres a day.
That's great.
And if they live in an area where there's less forest or there's a particularly dry patch, they'll walk up to 30 kilometres a day. But our elephants walk on average 10 kilometres a day. So that was great. So that's good for their feet, obviously good for the physiology, and it's good for them. But in this house, so we'll start at the roof. Looking at the roof, at the top we've got these, which is really important, everything's been thought about, is a huge skylight. Biggest skylight, something you imagine seeing in a big shopping centre.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's very, very big. Size of it, that's probably 100 metres by 30 metres, probably bigger than that.
So they're getting the natural light cycle.
Exactly. So yeah. Circadian rhythm is there.
Brilliant.
If you had a solid roof there with no windows and you locked that door, they've lost a lot of notion of what time of the day it is.
Yeah, exactly.
And believe me, elephants have a circadian rhythm. Like, I remember going back on one night looking at the cameras, and I noticed our matriarch Dina was getting a bit agitated and looking a bit more animated than normal and walking up and down and looked like she's looking for someone. And I was like, what is going wrong with her? And I couldn't figure it out. And then I was talking to my colleague saying, like, well, look at this, like, what's going on with Dina? Like, you know, you get to know how they act each day.
Yeah.
I was like, why is she acting so different? And then one of my colleagues, James, said, what morning was that? I said, Sunday. And he goes, the time went back. So technically, we were an hour late for her.
Oh.
So she was going, because when we arrived, we feed her. So she was like, where's my food? We weren't late technically, but in reality of time, we were late. So we were all arriving at our usual time. Like, Donald often get here at 7:30. But he wasn't arriving that day till 8:30.
That's mad. So elephants don't like daylight saving time.
No, definitely not. And I actually asked other keepers around Europe about that as well, if they experienced some similar things.
That's
and they
incredible.
Had. Because they're so in tune with it, you know what I mean? And
that's
a lot of animals
incredible.
Go, it's getting a bit darker now, time to move in. You know, but they have their routines as well.
That's mental.
So that's why the roof is so important. They're lovely big heaters above you, so the house will often be a toasty 22 degrees Celsius.
Mm.
Lots of lights as well, obviously. If you are working here later on like that, or early morning, right, that's obviously important to see what you're doing. We've also got sprinklers, which I won't turn on now. When we leave, we can turn them on. And so it keeps the ground moist. You've got to give the basically rain precipitation into this house. Otherwise, it's going to be very dusty, which won't be good for them or for us. So we keep it a nice balance of sand that's not wet, because we're not going to be too fond of that, but that it's got a degree of moisture in it as well.
Yeah.
And then you see all these holes in the walls. I'm sure you can guess what's inside the other side of that? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So these are all of timers, and they open up throughout the night.
They go into the boxes that are attached
exactly.
to the wall. Oh, that's
so
amazing.
Big
I saw big boxes
yeah.
outside. Yeah.
So those big boxes, you open them up, you put your bale of hay in there, and same with the cow house that we were in earlier on. So these timers open up during the night. So and again, you can vary it. But again, with the sleep study, I started to notice that Dina, especially, she was going over to the feed box 3-4 minutes before. That's how in tune she was with them. And that's when before they were open. But then I realised, wait a minute, this is not good, because she was getting to the line of sleep and she's realising, that would be opening soon. And she'd get up and she'd walk over to, because she was getting first go at the hay. Other elephants would come over to her then.
Yeah.
But I didn't think that was necessarily a good thing. So now we vary the time. And I've also, because I noticed the greatest concentration of sleep is about midnight till 5 a.m. I thought, well, let's not maybe not have as much feeding then, because you're disturbing them, that they are literally in a good deep sleep, and then they're all getting up for some hay. So after a long, long time of watching them, I kind of thought, right, this is probably the good time to not necessarily feed
you
them then.
Don't want the ice cream man driving up the street in the middle of the night.
When they're all
and
out.
Me jumping up, yeah, Mars bears.
Nice one, exactly. And so it worked perfectly in that regard. And then what else we got? So hanging up high is a net in a hoist. So that hoist is super strong. I'm quite certain in saying that holds 5 tons.
Wow.
So the idea, and the
it
same
swing out of there.
Yeah. Super strong, but no, the actual idea is well as swinging out of there strong enough, because basically, at the end of the hoist is a big bale of hay.
Yeah.
And again, so if we put hay in the ground, which you do for the calves, but if we put all the hay in the ground, elephants' trunks are full of about 100,000 muscles. So if that's not getting used, they get a thing called limpy trunk.
Yeah.
And so basically they'll lose their muscles. I know.
I'm saying nothing.
You're slightly
I'm
late there.
Nothing.
You're slightly late
nothing.
There.
So, basically that could cause problems for any animal, you can imagine.
Exactly.
And so basically having this hay, you can see the hay is up about.
So it exercises the high reaching as
exactly.
well. Yeah,
exactly.
That's amazing.
So that's about 30 metres. No, what would that be? No, not 30.
About of everything here.
Oh, we really tried to, like, so that's, you know, it mightn't look like the prettiest building in the world, but you could create something there, and there are some beautiful buildings out there, but they're not designed around the animal.
They're designed
by a wonderful architect back in the 1920s, and you put an animal into it, but it's not designed
aesthetically pleasing, but it's not practically pleasing for the animal. I get that a lot as well on a smaller scale with some of the stuff I keep, you know, even inverts, and some people, it's very plain and blah blah. But it's for them, it's absolutely perfect. It matches their environment. That's what I'm always big about. And I can see you are just after doing this on a massive scale.
Oh, yeah.
And it's incredible. And it's great because you do get the naysayers about zoos. You still get people saying, what's the need for them? What's the necessity? And I'm always trying to defend zoos. And this is just, you know what I mean? This setup here is like a prime example of keeping large, giant animals very, very happy and content. And you can see it in the way you've set it up. It's amazing.
Which is a very different way to the way they're kept in some zoos on how they used to be kept traditionally, right? Which was no positive reinforcement. And the keepers had contact with them, which means you had to use certain other methods that were maybe a bit brutal to control, in inverted commas, the animals.
It was, yeah, it was kind of seen as being, you had to be kind of dominant over the elephant to in order to get it to work. And, you know, it's a fairly contentious topic, but most zoos, and in Europe now, all zoos, if they're going to be part of EASA, our governing body, have to stop full contact training.
But of course, in places where you have tourists, tourist rides, that would still be the case. You see animals, you see them being beaten up really violently with these hooks, these bull hooks,
horrendous.
Which are rounded yokes with.
Rides when you go on holidays.
Yeah,
absolutely not. I had the pleasure.
If an animal that big is doing something very quietly with tourists, you know that there was violence at the back of it.
I would completely agree with you. And the process usually starts with 3 days of basic torture to break their spirit. I volunteered at a place called Elephant Nature Park in Thailand, and you see the aftermath of a lot of elephants there, and they do return animals' ability to rehabilitate blows my mind. They can come from such horror, and they can bounce back. They can do great. So there's some great places around the world, Africa, Asia, South America, that are rehabilitating animals that have had horrible lives and are doing great things. So yeah, it's what we love about our animals is, and you can even see in their skin and their contentment that they literally do what they want. Like if they don't want to train, if they want to go for a swim, if they want to eat, if they don't want to eat, if they want to stay outside at night, it's about giving choices. And, you know, we've all been lucky enough to see parts of the wild, and I haven't been to a country where there isn't massive devastation of habitat.
Yeah.
And when people say, oh, wouldn't animals be better in the wild? Means definite article, means there's something there. If it was definitely there everywhere, I would say, well, there's less of an argument for conservation then. But at the moment, it's amazing how much the environment is in the media nowadays, which is wonderful.
There isn't much wild left.
There is not much wild left, and that should be protected, and we should be thinking of it, and we should be remembering it. But, like, you know, I've been lucky enough to be to every continent in the world apart from Antarctica, and there haven't been anywhere where there isn't devastation. I remember driving for 7 hours through Malaysia, and it was all palm oil plantations, and it just broke my heart. And we even stayed in what was meant to be a national park, and the morning after we left where we'd been camping, the whole corner of forest that we had, I remember turning a sharp end to get to near our tents, was gone. And you wouldn't even think it. You think it was gone years. It was just flat, and it just breaks your heart. And that's how we justify what we do with zoos, with good zoos. And I firmly believe most zoos in Europe and loads of different parts of the world, Asia, everywhere, there's loads of good zoos. Nowadays, with communication being the way it is, like, we've made a discovery, we feel, with sand. So we talk to lots of different zoos about sand. But of course, other zoos tell us things about their discoveries, so that's why conferences are so important. Share the information. We're definitely not the experts in everything, but we're really proud of our elephant program. We think that they're in good health.
So the bull, he has his
sleeping arrangements?
A lot of humans would look at him and think, oh, he's very lucky. He gets all his females and all his calves with him during the day, and at about 4 o'clock, he says, "See you now." He goes into his bull house, and obviously, if he didn't want to, he wouldn't be going in. Right. We open the gate into his house, and in he comes, and that's it. So he sleeps quite consistently, about 4 hours a night.
Okay.
So which is a bit more than the girls. However, when a female is an estrus, we don't try and stop nature. So we never let him into their house. We see that as their safe place.
Okay.
So what we do is we let the females into his house. And that's when things change. When we had the females in his house, he did not sleep. He lay down literally for 2 minutes, for 1 minute one time and 1 minute another time. And that was it. So he went from 4 hours of sleep to no sleep because the girls are around. And then, because he wanted to mate, say for example, it was Anak at the time, he wanted to mate Anak.
So his multiple matings or just one?
A few. Yeah, okay. And it's quite a loud, and you can imagine quite a incredible sight. You know, a bull elephant that weighs about 5 tons and an Asian elephant. So, yeah, some of the sights you see here are just mind blowing. Absolutely, to say the least. Well, three in that case, it was two elephants.
God.
It doesn't take long.
We always have Sabre Willies. And, you know,
yeah. Well, elephant willies are amazing. You have to tell us about penises.
Well, they're enormous, obviously. But what's interesting, I suppose, about the genitalia is, of course, you will never see a bull elephant's testicles because they're inside. So, with obviously most mammals, the testicles need to be on the outside because of lower temperatures, 35 degrees Celsius in the testicles, whereas about 37 degrees in the body for most mammals. Whereas with elephants, the body's so big that you can get away, as far as I'm aware, with having the testicles inside because obviously they're very sensitive objects. So, but if you can keep them inside and protected, it makes more sense. So that's why they.
Handy, you know what I mean? Yeah. Punch up outside a chipper.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they're going to be well protected. So,
and the penises are long because they have a long way to travel, don't they?
Oh, they do. They have a long way to go. And there's a bit of a turn there as well.
There's a bit of movement in them as well. I saw, is that just my imagination?
When I've seen them, they look like they're well, certainly when they're outside, they're quite straight. Yeah. But I think when they go inside the vulva of the female, I do think there is a degree of turning there.
Oh, wow.
But I wouldn't be the expert on the insides now. when it goes inside.
And I definitely wouldn't want to get too close to that.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, again, the sounds would be incredible. Like, you know, when you see animals mating. I've seen various different species mating, and it's always an interesting sight. Orangutans, and they're, you know, gorillas can go for quite a long time. And, you know, so there's various different.
Did you know what I saw on the savannah? Was I telling you about this?
No.
Ostriches mating.
Oh, you were, yeah.
Ostrich mating. No, have not.
Oh, my God. It was hilarious. So there was a male ostrich with two females, and the females start doing a fan dance like an exotic burlesque dancer.
Amazing.
And waving her backside in front of him, and then she goes off and starts running, and our local expert was saying she is teasing him.
Wow.
And I went, what do you mean? Now the ostrich, which would normally have a very pinkish neck, his neck went bright red, like flush. And he took off like a racehorse after her, and she's doing this fan dance in the distance. And he went over to her, and there was a very elaborate joint fan dance as he was on top of her. And the mating went on for like at least a minute and a half to 2 minutes, which for a bird
is insanely long.
Yeah. Yeah. So the whole process was fabulous, but I loved his big red neck and head, like a fella in. You know, I mean, coppers at 3 a.m.
Wow.
After seeing some bird.
The fun of the chase.
It was amazing. He was just like, raring to go, and he shot off. And I just thought it was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. Rang home, the first thing I said was, I saw some ostriches riding. It was brilliant. It was really, really good. So, yeah.
The joy of nature.
Exactly.
What I found most interesting about the sleep study when I heard that you were doing it is that loads of people thought, no way, they don't lie down to sleep.
But and this is the whole thing.
Yeah.
I can't believe that because, I know, here.
That's what we were fed.
Yeah, I suppose. And can I ask you a question? Before the zoo was updated, when I was a kid, obviously, back in the 1800s, the elephants back then wouldn't have had the sand and the setup you have now. Would they have slept on the ground, or would they have stood up?
Occasionally they did lie down.
Okay. They were on concrete, weren't they?
They were on concrete, and like as a part of a master plan, as soon as we, back in 94, we got the money. It's a while ago now, and that was a great turning point for the zoo. And so when it was decided that things are going to improve, thought went into, right, what are we going to build? We could easily just throw up a lovely big shiny house with lovely shiny bars and a lovely concrete floor and you can wash it down every day with a big hose. And that's a big thing for some people to kind of oversee as well is you know, traditionally in the zookeeper's mind many decades ago, it was about making the area spotlessly clean. So that's why concrete was lovely for keepers, because you could hose them down and you look, oh, that's gleaming.
You, yeah.
Whereas that's great if you're working in a restaurant and you want things spotless. But that's not what animals need.
No.
That's for the human mindset. So that's why it was great to take our time and look at plans and kind of go, right, what do the elephants need? And that's when, by hiring the right people, like Alan Rucroft is our elephant specialist, and he and other people said, no, wait a minute, what about trying sand? So for a lot of people, it was a big news in the zoo world, because a lot of people were like, sand? Oh, wait a minute, is that not dangerous? Some people. and it was great to convince them and
what
go, look.
Were you worried about like impactation from swallowing
exactly,
and stuff like that?
Impactation. Yeah. But we kind of thought, well, we don't think animals are that silly.
This is my thing. You know there's a big thing in the reptile community about like impactation with sand. And
what does that mean?
Impactation is like you swallow debris when you're eating. And it basically gets stuck in your gut and it causes a big plug to form and you die, for want of a better, a simpler explanation. And my thing as well is like, well, they live on this stuff in the wild.
Yeah.
So, you know, sure.
I think if you keep the principles the same, like say, for example, with reptiles, if you give them a soaking wet rat and then he's obviously going to have more stuck to him.
Yeah.
So if you keep the principles the same, if he's an Australian desert reptile,
yes,
we'll keep
it dry.
Exactly.
I was about to say food presentation is my thing. I say that all the time. I say, look, you're not going to throw a wet chick or a wet rat onto dry sand, and then you are going to get impactation. But if you let it dry out naturally and put it in, or even as I do, I put it on a slate.
Yeah.
Just put it on a slate and they'll eat it on the slate. And you know what I mean? But I see why they would have been worried with the elephants, I suppose. But
as you say, they're not thick. So listen, Brendan, that was absolutely amazing. Just wonderful.
Thank you. That is one of the coolest interviews we've ever done.
Thank you so much.
It's really,
I feel
really
honoured to be on your show. So thanks very much.
I really am.
We're huge fans of you guys here and you in particular. And I know you're heading off soon to do something exciting.
I'm going to Tunisia.
Oh,
so
wow.
Over the moon, yes. I'm going to a few different national parks to look up at. We sponsor numerous different products around the world, but we sponsor a product for scimitar horned oryx, which are technically extinct in the wild. We're going over to see basically how the project is doing. We've been sponsoring it for many years now, and it'd be just great to see what they're doing, because our principle is that the people in those countries know how to run these things better than we do. So what's best to do is send them money, because they always spend it wisely. You know, we make sure that they're reputable, obviously, first. And you can find out very easily if they are. And, of course, these projects are very reputable and they're doing amazing work. And so we're working with other zoos in Europe and around the world to basically protect these. And some animals from Ireland, one animal from Ireland has gone to Tunisia.
Yeah, another reason to support your local zoo. Your local ethical zoo. Well,
absolutely.
So happy travels.
Thank you very much.
Man, that was awesome. We're going to get a selfie.
Yes.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
There you go. That was brilliant. That was so cool, man.
Thank you.
And a big thank you from Collie and me to the staff and the team of Dublin Zoo for taking us into the Elephant House. It was an absolutely wonderful experience. And a reminder that The Critter Shed is now a proud member of the Warren.ie. That's a podcast network that's home to some of Ireland's most remarkable and innovative podcasts. So if you like The Critter Shed, chances are there might be something else living in the Warren with us that you might like to listen to. So hop on over to thewarren.ie and bring your headphones. See you next time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.